This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
No weapon formed against me shall prosper. Preach. And every tongue that rises against me in judgment, thou shalt condemn. Lord, give me a sign. For this is the heritage of the servants of the Lord. Preach. And that righteousness is of me, said the Lord. Preach. Amen. Lord, give me a sign. I really need to talk to you, Lord. Since the last time we talked, the walk has been hard. Now I know you haven't left me, but I feel like I'm alone. I'm a big boy now, but I'm still not grown. And I'm still going through it. Pain and a hurt. Soaking up trouble like rain in the dirt. And not only I can stop the rain with just a mention of my Savior's name. In the name of Jesus. Devil, I rebuke you for what I go through and trying to make me do what I used to. But all that stops right here. As long as the Lord's in my life, I will have no fear. I will know no pain from the light to the dark. I will show no shame, spit it right from the heart. Cause it's right from the start. You held me down and ain't nothing they can tell me now. Lord, give me a sign.
Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what I'm gonna find. It's all in time. Show me how to teach the mind. Show me sublime.
Lord, give me a sign.
Show me what I got to do to bring me closer to you. Cause I'ma go through you on me too. Just let me know what to do.
Lord, give me a sign. Show me something. I'm tired of talking to him, knowing he frightened. Crying about life ain't nothing. But you either be the one mad cause you trapped or the one hunting. Trapped in your own mind, waiting on the Lord. A hunting with the word that cuts like a sword. The spoken word is stronger than the strongest man. Carries the whole world like the strongest hand. Through the trials and tribulations, you never let us down, Jesus. I know you're here with us now, Jesus. I know you're still with us now. I want to feel, show me how. Please let me take your hand, guide me. I walk slow, but stay right beside me. Devil's trying to find me, hide me. Hold up, I take that back. Protect me and give me the strength to fight.
Give me a sign. Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what I'm going to find. It's all in time.
That's right. Lord, give me a sign.
Show me how to reach the blind.
Lord, give me a sign.
Show me what I got.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome. Welcome to the View for this week, for the 19th of March, 2023. My name is K. Quincy Parker. I'm your host. And it is, as usual, my supreme and extreme pleasure to view today. And I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today about some of these important stories in our week in politics. I just want to let you know, right here at the top of the show, of course, you can call us to discuss anything you hear on the show or anything you want to chat about from the political arena in the week that has just gone past. And you can call us at 323-6232-325-4316 or 325-4256-5-9. As usual, we will look forward to your text messages at 422-4796. That's 422-4796. And I hope that you have a moment to join us. Because I look forward to hearing what you're saying. This week was a rough week. In addition to the passing of one of my a gentleman I see as a mentor, I also this week was confronted with dealing with the passing of a friend. And so today, I would like to, I know, to dedicate today's show to my friend, Graham Thorderson. May he rest in peace, and may God comfort his family and those of us who knew and enjoyed him, worked with him, and played with him. He was a great fellow. I loved Graham Daly. And the other part of the roughness of the week was, you know, dealing with Ed Bethel's passing. And so rather than ramble on as I normally might, I'm going to read what I wrote on Facebook after I had sort of sat with it for a day or two. And I hope you get something from it. Ed Bethel. Sir Ed Bethel, what did he mean to me? I grew up with Ed's voice as the defining voice of Yale journalistic excellence and grace. His delivery was always pitch perfect, and the gravitas he brought to the news made a young me consider the news of the day to be truly important to my life. As I grew up and waded into the field of journalism myself, Ed's voice stuck with me. And perhaps subconsciously, I modeled my own presentation style after him. This is almost certainly true with respect to broadcast journalism, and I hope it doesn't come across as hubris for me to say that having Ed as a blueprint and a model has served me well. Time passed and politics played its inevitable role in the passage of life and changes of circumstance, and Ed Bethel landed in the diplomatic corps. Once again, style and grace of character were his hallmarks. And as luck, or fate, or God would have it, I followed him into the diplomatic corps. Once again, the senior man served as a model for me. Those who worked with him in New York will attest to this, I have no doubt. Time passed again, as it is wont to do, and when I returned to the Bahamas from service in the diplomatic corps, I served in Washington, D.C., I had the profound pleasure and privilege of working with Ed in the Jones Communications newsroom. Pablo Wendell Jones brought Ed in to serve as a mentor for the young reporters on his staff, and those who recognized the giant among them had the benefit of his advice and guidance in a personal way. As an editor and myself a senior journalist, I greatly envy. What I wouldn't have given as a cub reporter to have Ed Bethel as a direct mentor on a daily basis. I applaud the many tributes across the social media community and join my voice to the chorus of praise and commendation for one who was a good man and a great man. I loved his sense of humor as much as his sense of history, his humility, and his self-confidence. He was a man who sought not to impress, but to improve. And as he has once again gone ahead of me, I say with all the affection he possessed, may he rest in peace and rise in power. And with that, I will say no more on the subject. Now, for our first story in this week's political review, I wanted to start with this because I agree with the editorial in the Tribune. It is almost expected to see a person change their view or opinion or go back on something they said or try to find a way to reinterpret their statement or their position once they change from opposition to government. But in our first story this week, Education Minister Glanis Hannah-Martin this week reiterated that she opposes Royal Caribbean International's $100 million beach club project on Paradise Island. In 2021, Glanis Hannah-Martin called that proposal, the then proposed deal, harebrained. And speaking with reporters this week, she stuck to her guns on the project, asserting that the cruise industry does not require an island off New Providence. Hannah-Martin said that she favored instead development of cultural and entrepreneurial opportunities for cruise ship visitors when they disembark, particularly given the recurrent complaint by cruise visitors that there's nothing to do in the port of Nassau. The minister said the Davis administration had inherited the deal from the Free National Movement, and she had, and her views have very publicly not changed on the subject. Last week, the Davis administration announced that it has approved the project, which includes 4 acres of inland land, and that is subject to environmental approvals. Minister of Tourism, Investments, and Aviation, Chester Cooper, said the government intends to convert the Crown land contribution into an equity stake in the project, and that that equity stake would then be conveyed to the country's sovereign wealth fund. Cooper has said the deal approved by the Davis administration has taken a different approach than the one taken by the previous administration. Royal Caribbean is interested in developing a beach excursion on Paradise Island, noting that it plans to greatly increase the number of passengers it brings into Nassau in the future, and seeing the need for more engines for guests when they leave the ship while at port. In a separate interview, Hannah-Martin reiterated to Eyewitness News that Royal Caribbean already owns Kokoki, which exclusively serves the cruise line's guests in the Berry Islands. She said the model she favored, of course, and this is to reiterate, is not the private island experience, but that when cruise visitors come to New Providence, they should participate and partake in what is already on offer. By way of context, the Royal Caribbean project was first proposed under the Minnis administration. In 2020, then opposition leader Philip Brave Davis, now prime minister, had expressed worries over the possible environmental damage Royal Caribbean's project would cause. He also questioned why the government would lease land on Paradise Island to Royal Caribbean International when the company already owns Kokoki, an exclusive private destination for the company. At the time, Davis said that it was grossly unfair to Bahamians and that the next PLP government would terminate the agreement. I want to be clear. When he was in opposition, Prime Minister Brave Davis said that his administration would terminate the Royal Caribbean agreement. Instead, what they have done is completed it and announced it as a feather in their cap. And I say that to draw the contrast between what Davis said at the time and what he's saying now, versus the question of whether Hannah Martin's comments this week, wherein she stuck to her position that she disagreed with this project from the beginning and still disagrees with it now, whether that position will create a question of whether it's appropriate for her to stay in the Davis cabinet. Because traditionally, cabinet ministers are expected to present a united front on all decisions in keeping with the principle of collective responsibility. In the Guardian's reportage on this story, the reporter quotes the Manual of Cabinet and Ministry Procedure, which reads all major decisions of policy must be made by cabinet. It also says a fundamental principle of cabinet government is unity. It is important to represent a united front to the public. If any minister feels conscientiously unable to support a decision taken by cabinet, he has one course open to him, and that is to resign his office, unquote. Will Glenys Hannah Martin be asked to resign? Will she be forced to resign? We're watching, and we will see. That would be a significant blow for the Davis administration. Glenys Hannah Martin is the bomb, but we'll see. Next in the Political Review, Senior Price Inspector for the Consumer Affairs Division, Theodore Curry, said this week that mom-and-pop stores are actually the more frequent violators of price control rules. Curry told a press briefing at the Office of the Prime Minister that most of the bigger stores are actually in compliance. He said it's the mom-and-pop stores who complain about the cost of doing business, and that wherever they can try and get around the system, they tend to do that. In October, the Prime Minister announced temporary price control measures for wholesalers and retailers, further limiting their margins. The move was aimed at assisting families dealing with mounting inflation. Those measures expire on April 17th. That's in a month from now. But Minister of Economic Affairs Michael Alkeidis said the government is considering some permanent additions to the list. Curry's revelation that it's mom and pops who are the more frequent, violators of price control rules is consistent with warnings from the Retail Grocers Association that smaller stores would struggle the most in coping with the new measures. He said there had been isolated cases of price gouging, but nothing of major concern. The most common complaint has to do, of course, and we've seen this, I actually even talked about it here on the show, with the volatility of the price of eggs. Up next, after Bahamas Christian Council President Bishop Dalton Fernander vowed to push back against what he said is the government's intrusion into the financial affairs of the church, the Office of the Attorney General this week sought to quell his concerns, stressing that the compliance unit interviews being conducted are intended to collect up-to-date information on programs and structures and are not financial audits, as Bishop Fernander apparently suggested. Now, I'm going to get back to my notes on this story, but I just want to take a moment here to say that I am seeing a trend that I think is worth paying attention to. And that trend is the Christian Council seeming to take exception to the state's ability to order any entity within the jurisdiction to take a course of action. The fact that nonprofit organizations, and this is bigger than just the church, which is kind of the point I'm getting at, the fact that nonprofit organizations are being asked to provide financial information in order to ensure that their finances are protected from money laundering and terrorism financing and any other potential for malfeasance is not an overreach by the state, but it is to protect its citizens. And this idea that somehow the state cannot ask the church questions is problematic to me. Again, you know, and please keep in mind, as the statement is made at the beginning of the show, my opinion is my opinion. This is Quincy Parker saying this, that I think the church is, in particular, the Christian Council, and in particular, Bishop Fernando, may be overreacting on this issue. And I'm curious as to why. And I will seek to have a conversation with him so that we can have a response from him on the show next week. Of course, if Bishop Commander, if you're listening, you're welcome to call in. I know you're a busy man and you got things to do. But I'm going to try and get some comments from him on that because, well, listen to the story yourself, right? In a statement, the Office of the Attorney General said the outreach to the nonprofit organization sector aims to gather information based on assigned risk ratings. Most Christian Council members would be considered low risk with either a light touch compliance review or no review at all. However, basic information must be collected for appropriate risk classification. That's the position taken by the Office of the Attorney General. In addition, the compliance unit of the OAG would be hosting training sessions next month to assist not-for-profits in understanding Know Your Customer, that's KYC, obligations, and the related procedures. Earlier this month, Bishop Fernando told our news that he found out that some churches were, in his word, accosted by members of the state who did site visits and told them they had to do certain things. He said the Christian Council had decided to create a committee to address the matter and is intruding on the church. He says the separation between church and state is being eroded and that they want, you know, they being the government, want the church's financial information. I really think he's overreacting here. The compliance reviews of the church and other nonprofit organizations are requirements under the Nonprofit Organizations Act in 2019. The act was passed under the Minnis administration in 2018, and it seeks to provide for the regulation of nonprofit organizations and to ensure that such organizations are operating in a transparent manner and are not engaged in activities which constitute an identified risk, namely corruption, cybercrime, human trafficking, money laundering, or financing terrorism, or proliferation, or financing of weapons of mass destruction. It is a simple... It's inconceivable that Bishop Fernando would want any member of his flock, both personal flock and his flock as the president of the Christian Council, to be subjected to undue scrutiny and questions about these kinds of very invasive and problematic things when a simple compliance would obviate that necessity, that would mean that you wouldn't have to do these kinds of things. So it actually seems to me that what the Office of the Attorney General is doing is trying to work on behalf of the church. So I really don't understand Bishop Fernandez. Yeah, I'm going to have to talk to him about this. The reason that I included it in this week's political review is because when the bill came, Fernandez said at the time that it was, quote, an intrusion of the state into the church. And so that's what he said then. And what he said this last week was that he had not expected this kind of thing to happen under the PLP administration. Bishop Fernandez pointed out that it was the Davis-led PLP that told the country that the bill was something they thought was out of whack. And Fernandez said, it's really disheartening that it's taking place without consultation. Yeah, Wally, I got a call. A note just now, our guest won't be able to join us after all, so we can put that away. Next in this week's political review, I included this in this week's lineup because I didn't want to. And I felt like the fact that I didn't want to meant that I needed to do it. Former Free National Movement Cabinet Minister Lanisha Rowe on Wednesday became the second member of the former administration accused of using her office for personal gain. Rowe was charged along with her husband, Von Tenken Rowe, Alfred Mortimer, Godfrey Burroughs, and Wilfred Rowe Jr. They were charged before Senior Magistrate Carolyn Vogt Evans. Ms. Rowe, who resigned as Minister of Youth, Sports, and Culture just months before the FNM was voted out of office in 2021, faced charges of bribery and conspiracy to commit fraud by false pretenses in valued at over $700,000. Prosecutors alleged that from 2019 to 2021, the then cabinet minister conspired to commit fraud regarding the award of contracts for work done at the National Tennis Center and Baseball Stadium, the South Beach Pools, the Grand Bahama Sporting Complex, and the Kendall G. L. Isaacs Gymnasium. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Prosecutors allege that Mrs. Rowe accepted a $48,303.74 bribe in relation to the award of a contract to GNC Landscaping for work done at the Grand Bahama Sporting Complex while conspiring with others to commit fraud. He's also accused of conspiring to commit fraud in relation to a $9,500 contract awarded to Avion General Maintenance, the work at the Grand Bahama Sporting Complex. Performance of conspiring to commit fraud in relation to 10 contracts with a combined value of $288,985.82 for work at the South Beach Pools. He is further charged with conspiracy to commit fraud in relation to a $228,000 contract awarded to Restoration, Landscaping, and Maintenance for work at the National Tennis Center and Baseball Stadium. Rowe and her husband are accused of conspiracy to commit fraud in respect of a $168,000 contract for the Kendall G. L. Isaacs Gymnasium. Mortimer also faced a bribery charge. He is accused of offering an advantage as an inducement for the award of a contract to GNC Landscaping work at the National Sporting Complex. Burroughs and Rule, a conspiracy to commit fraud by false pretenses in connection with a contract valued at $34,690 awarded to Miller's Masonry, Carpentry, and Maintenance for work at the South Beach Pools. Burroughs is accused of fraudulently obtaining $34,690 for the same contract. The defendants did not have to enter pleas to the charges because the prosecution intends to fast-track the case to the Supreme Court with the presentation of a voluntary bill of indictment in May. Last June, Long Island MP Adrian Gibson appeared in court on charges of abuse of power while he served as executive chairman of the Water and Sewage Corporation under the Minnis administration. He is awaiting trial. I'm not going to comment on that. That Dr. Minnis was fond of saying, let the chips fall where they may. And we in this country need the truth to come to the light. And that's as far down the road as I'll go there. This week, I want to go under the radar. This week was something that happened in Geneva. Now, our under the radar stories are generally stories that happened in the Bahamian political arena in the previous week that I feel did not get the appropriate amount of scrutiny or attention, or I feel like that people didn't get it, or that they didn't pay attention to it. They may not have seen it or heard it. And I think that this week's story that's under the radar is a really great one. And I'm really excited to share it with you. Sorry, folks. Apparently, I muted my microphone right when I started sharing the story. That's hilarious. I apologize. So from Geneva, Switzerland, about a week ago, the Bahamian member of the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, that would be the CEDAW, also a human rights expert and attorney, Marion Bethel, played a pivotal role in a landmark ruling for Filipina sexual slavery victims. This was during the 84th session of CEDAW. Bethel served as one member of five on the Working Group on Communications under the optional protocol of the CEDAW Convention. This working group was responsible for examining the complaint filed by 24 Filipino nationals. Bethel was also the case rapporteur for this particular complaint. While the Bahamas is a signatory to CEDAW, it has not ratified the optional protocol. The optional protocol allows women whose rights may have been violated by a state to petition the committee. In this circumstance, CEDAW sits as a quasi-judicial body to consider the complaints and may even recommend payment of compensation. And I think you can imagine why the Bahamas has not yet signed the optional protocol with regard to the CEDAW optional protocol potential for the recommendation of compensation. I think that's the issue. In any event, on November 23rd, 1944, the complainants of the case, commonly known as Comfort Women, unquote, were forcibly taken to what translates as the Red House, the Japanese headquarters in San Ildefonso. They were detained in the Red House for 1 day to 3 weeks, where they were repeatedly subjected to rape, other forms of sexual violence, torture, and inhumane detention conditions. They have since endured long-term physical, psychological, social, and economic consequences, including physical injuries, post-traumatic stress, permanent damage to their reproductive capacity, and harm to their social relationships in their communities, marriage, and work. The committee ultimately found that the Philippines failed to provide reparation, social support, and recognition commensurate with the harm perpetrated against the women by the Imperial Japanese Army during the Second World War. It requested that the Philippines provide the victims with full reparation, including material compensation and an official apology for the continuing discrimination. Moment of victory for these victims who were previously silenced, ignored, written off, and erased from history in the Philippines. Bethel said in her report that the committee has duly recognized the agency and voice of these women in seeking social justice and redress for violation of their human rights. The committee's views not only respect the right of the victims to full reparation, inclusive of an apology, they pave the way for the restoration of their dignity, integrity, reputation, and honor. Bethel said, and I think that this is one of the main statements that led me to include this story in this week's Political Review, and this is one of the top reasons why I think this story went under the radar. This case demonstrating or trivializing sexual violence against women and girls in war and conflict situations is indeed another egregious form of violation of women's rights. We hope that the committee's decision serves to restore human dignity for all of the Filipino victims, both deceased and living. Unquote. Further, the committee also reviewed a complaint filed by a Spanish national who underwent premature labor, induction, and a cesarean section without her consent. The committee ruled that the traumatized mother was subjected to obstetric violence and requested that Spain provide full reparation, inclusive of an apology for the damage that she suffered to her physical and psychological health. Obstetric violence includes mistreatment as well as verbal and physical abuse. I wonder what Bethel said was that if doctors and nurses had followed all applicable standards and protocols, it might be possible that the victim would have given birth naturally without having to go through a series of procedures that dehumanized her and left her without agency and dignity during childbirth. Bethel said was that the case calls on the Bahamas to reflect on and address our own protocols and standards regarding the treatment of women in healthcare facilities in compliance with the human rights standards of dignity, respect, and autonomy. The committee also requested that Spain take action to combat gender stereotyping and gender-based violence against women that was widespread, systematic in nature, and ingrained in health systems. This included providing obstetricians and other health workers with adequate reproductive health rights and specific training for judicial and law enforcement officials. The experts on women's rights also requested that Spain request respect women's autonomy and the ability to make informed decisions about their reproductive health by providing them with complete information at every stage of childbirth and by requiring that their free, prior, and informed consent be obtained for any invasive treatment during childbirth, as well as to develop, publicize, and implement a charter of patients' rights. I think that it will only be, and again, now this is Quincy Parker speaking, not Marion Bethel, or CEDAW, or Guardian Talk Radio. But I think that these requests to Spain could very easily also be issued to the Bahamas. I'm sure that there are any number of situations that we can all almost personally recall that would bring to mind the necessity for Bahamian systems to respect women's autonomy and ability to make informed decisions about their reproductive health, and also situations where free, prior, and informed consent needed to be obtained for an invasive outbreak. It's just, again, I have a habit of making these didactic statements, and I'm attempting to be better. So I want to leave it there. I want to end this story under the radar with pointing out that Bethel was the first Bahamian to be elected to a UN Human Rights Treaty body when she started her first term in 2017. And since then, she served as chair of the Working Group on Inquiries under the Optional Protocol and participated as an active member of the Working Group on Trafficking in Women and Girls in the Context of Global Migration, the Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals, and the Working Group on Working Methods. She's now a senior member of that influential committee, and Bethel was recently elected vice chair, demonstrating the global body's confidence in her exceptional service. Her current term ends. So, Wally, let's take a short break here, and then when we come back, we can look at our top story of the week for the Political Review. All right. No weapon formed against me shall prosper, and every tongue that rises against me in judgment, thou shalt condemn. Lord, give me a sign, for this is the heritage of the servants of the Lord. Preach. And the righteousness is of me, said the Lord. Preach. Amen.
Lord, give me a sign. I really need to talk to you, Lord. Since the last time we talked, the walk has been hard. Now I know you haven't left me, but I feel like I'm alone. I'm a big boy now, but I'm still not grown. And I'm still going through it. Pain and a hurt. Soaking up trouble like rain in the dirt. And I know only I can stop the rain with just a mention of my Savior's name. In the name of Jesus. Devil, I rebuke you for what I go through and trying to make me do what I used to. But all that stops right here. As long as the Lord's in my life, I will have no fear. I will know no pain from the light to the dark. Dump it right from the heart, cause it's right from the start. You held me down and ain't nothing they can tell me now. Lord, give me a sign.
Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what I'm gonna find. It's all in time. Show me how to teach the mind. Show me how to reach the blind.
Lord, give me a sign.
Show me what I got to do to bring me closer to you. Cause I'ma go through whatever you want me to. Just let me know what to do.
Lord, give me a sign.
My business couldn't survive without my credit card machine from Fidelity.
It's fast, convenient, and my clients love it.
My sales increase, and I can track my earnings.
Get your credit card machine from Fidelity today.
Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, boy, just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking about everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big contract. Get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know he's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Looking for another way to save on your grocery bill? Then look no more. My Solomon Smart Rewards, the ultimate loyalty program. To start earning smart rewards every time you shop Solomon's, Fresh Market, and Exuma Markets. Loyalty members earn 1 point for every dollar spent, and points can be earned and redeemed in all participating locations. Don't be left out of the savings. In Nassau, Grand Bahama, or Exuma today, start earning your smart rewards.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
The Grand Bahama Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Get your Charifta tickets. The 50th Charifta Games is coming. April 7th to April 10th. Tickets are on sale now. Online at charifta50.com or at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium, Western Grand Entrance. For more details, email tickets@charifta50.com or call 605-4051.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Lord, give me a sign.
Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what I'm gonna find. It's all in time. Show me how to teach the mind. Show me how to reach the blind.
Lord, give me a sign.
Show me what I got to do to bring me closer to you. Cause I'ma go through whatever you want me to. Just let me know what to do.
Lord, give me a sign.
Please show me something. I'm tired of talking to him, knowing he fighting. Cry about life ain't nothing. But you either be the one
one mad cause you trapped or the one hunting. Trapped in your own mind waiting on the Lord. A hunting with the word that cuts like a sword. Spoken word is stronger than the storm. Carries the whole world like the strongest hand. Through the trials and tribulations you never let us down. Jesus, I know you're here with us now. Jesus, I know you're still with us.
Yes. Lord, give me a sign. Protect me and give me the strength of faith. Give me a sign. Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what I'm doing. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, Political Review. My name is K. Quincy Parker. I'm your host. DMX is doing what he's supposed to do. So it might as well be me and you to do what we're supposed to do now. And so far in this week's Political Review, we've talked about we've talked about the fact that Gladys Hanna-Martin has taken a stand that we don't see as much as I think citizens feel like we should, right? She's being consistent. She said in opposition that she was against the Royal Caribbean International project. And now that she's in government and her government has approved the project, she still is against it. And I think that's an interesting position to take. And I also think it's very... Anyways, par for the course for Aunt Glennis, anyway. We also talked about the fact that, according to a senior price inspector in the Consumer Affairs Division, it's actually the mom and pop stores who are the most frequent violators of price control rules. So I think that is a thing that we have to be aware of and pay attention to. We also looked at Bishop Dalton Fernander, who's president of the Bahamas Christian Council, pushing back against the government's request for, he calls it an intrusion, and said that the state is intruding on the church. The Office of the Attorney General says they're just trying to find information that allows them to determine the level of risk associated with these nonprofit organizations, which is an issue that is much broader than the church. And it is interesting that it is only Bishop Fernander and the Christian Council who I have seen raising a fuss about this matter. I'm not sure what constituency he's actually representing in this go around. And this week we also looked at the laundry list of charges that have been brought against former cabinet minister Lanisha Rolle and some other people associated with her. And that one hurt my heart. It really did. For my own reasons. When we went under the radar, we looked at the report that came out of CEDAW, where Marion Bethel is now the vice chair, about a landmark ruling for sexual slavery. And the ruling also had some interesting corollary findings, one of which was that, this is not a finding, this is a statement of fact. The fact that the Bahamas is not a signatory of the optional protocol of CEDAW, is, I think, worth noting. And the reason I think it's worth noting is because that optional protocol, even though we are a CEDAW signatory, we have not ratified the optional protocol, which would allow women whose rights have been violated by the state to petition the committee as individuals. And in this circumstance, CEDAW would sit as a quasi-judicial body to consider the complaints and might even recommend payment of compensation. And I think that is, that's worth taking note of and paying attention to. Also coming out of that report, some recommendations to Spain. And I am of the view that some requests made that Spain take specific action. I'm of the view that the requests that have been made to Spain could just as easily have been made to the Bahamas. First, one of the requests was that Spain take action to combat gender stereotyping and gender-based violence against women in health systems. It says that gender-based violence and gender stereotyping are widespread and systematic in nature and ingrained in the health systems in Spain. I would argue that that is the same in the Bahamas. And they also requested that Spain respect women's autonomy and ability to make informed decisions about their reproductive health by providing them with complete information at every stage of childbirth and by requiring their free, prior, and informed consent be obtained for any invasive treatment during childbirth, as well as to develop, publicize, and implement a charter of patients' rights. I think that request could also be made to the Bahamas. I expect to push back. I'm ready for it. Bring it on. But that's where we've been so far. And remaining ahead of us, as we the top story in this week's political review. Now, our top story is not necessarily expected to be the biggest story in politics in the week that was. The political review's top story is, in our view, the story that has the most impact and that has the most relevance for whether it's a national discussion, debate, but it's the story that means the most in terms of what is going to have impact in the future, as opposed to what is necessarily in politics a passing moment. Because we know that in politics, the moment is important, but things that are happening that have repercussions for generations are far more important than something that is a flash in the pan here today, gone tomorrow. And so it's with that in mind that we turn to the top story for this week. It's 5 o'clock. You're listening to the Political Review with host K. Quincy Parker. That's me. And we thank you so much for joining us. Also, I wanted to reiterate, you're welcome to call. The phone numbers, the phone numbers are 323-323-6232-4316. 325-4259. And as always, you can text us at 422-4796. And we're also on Facebook. I think we might be on Instagram too. I'm not sure. But yeah, come find us and see what you have to say. But this week's top story is actually two stories revolving around some landmark legislation passed by the Menas administration. In particular, I'm talking about the Public Procurement Act, Public Finance Management Act. The Davis administration this past week repealed and replaced those landmark acts. And the prime minister says there was no ulterior motive behind the decision to do so. That, of course, did not pass the smell test with the official opposition Free National Movement. So let's look at it. The PLP this week passed the Public Procurement Bill 2022 and the Public Finance Management Bill 2023. The opposition voted against the bills. The way the Prime Minister framed the debate, repeal and replacement was required to either strengthen loopholes within the existing legislation or cover blind spots and address unintended consequences. The bills debated and passed this week replaced the Public Finance Management Act 2021, the Fiscal Responsibility Act 2018, sections of the Financial Administration and Audit Act, and the Public Procurement Act 2021. The Davis administration, which came to power in September 20, that the Public Procurement Act came into force, foreshadowed that it intended to bring amendments to the act from the minute they became the government. Davis called the existing legislation troublesome and challenging. Yet, in opposition, the Progressive Liberal Party voted to pass the Public Procurement Bill in March of 2021. Of particular note, when we consider this story, the FNM, particularly Michael, FNM leader Michael Pintard, has accused the Davis administration of breaking these specific laws repeatedly. Among the provisions in the 2021 Act, an annual report must be tabled in Parliament every October, detailing every contract awarded during the reporting period, among other things. Davis has acknowledged that his administration ignored major provisions in that act, but has insisted that his government is following the law, a claim he reiterated yesterday. You can see why there might be some concern for the Prime Minister to say that, yes, we're ignoring major provisions in that act, but we're still following the law. So, you know, you got to make it make sense, I believe, is what they say, right? Davis slammed back at the FNM by saying that while the FNM took great pleasure in accusing his administration of not adhering to the law on a variety of matters, it's pretty clear that the FNM had no clue how to implement the legislation they passed. Ouch. Davis said the new bill allows for the preferential treatment of specific groups. And I'm skipping to what I think is perhaps some of the more important elements of the bill. He said that his administration would introduce preferences for micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises, women-owned business, family-owned businesses, and youth-owned businesses. This is... If I'm not mistaken, those groups would have been the same groups covered by the preferential treatment in the old Public Procurement. So when the Prime Minister says that he would introduce preferences, I think that language needs to be adjusted. But before I make a definitive statement on that, I'm going to have to reread the old legislation just to be sure.
Of course, the prime minister said that the proof of the effectiveness of his administration's approach would be clearly seen in the results. On the other side of the story, opposition Free National Movement leader Michael Pindard has accused the Davis administration of bringing to Parliament, quote, regressive amendments that take us back in terms of greater accountability and greater transparency, unquote. Pindard was referring to the new bills which the government voted against, which the opposition voted against. Remember now, we're talking about the Public Procurement Bill 2022 and the Public Finance Management Bill 2023. Pintard suggested that the Davis administration was engaging in linguistic gymnastics. And he said that while words are important, so is the spirit of legislation, the spirit of the people who are tasked implementing the provisions of the legislation. The opposition leader said that his party did not believe that the Davis administration had done a good enough job in terms of improving in their amendments both of the pieces of legislation that are under review. Pintard said that through its actions, the government has weakened the legislation, which was intended to ensure accountability and transparency. He lamented that after all this time that the government has taken, those that were hired to provide them with advice, that this is where things have ended up, with consolidation of power in the hands of the minister, consolidation of power in the hands of the executive, gutting the powers of the left. Though the Progressive Liberal Party in opposition voted for the Public Procurement Bill in 2021, the Davis administration has, as we've said, largely disregarded key provisions of the act, which came into force just 2 weeks before the 2021 general election. Pintard said that what they're doing is hiding what they are doing with the people's money, which is why they refuse to comply with the act. He added that the administration is falling short in terms of what they have attempted to do with the amended Public Procurement Act. In terms of the Public Finance Management Act, Pintard said that it is, quote unquote, interesting that they removed the penalties, unquote. What he said was, and I'm going to quote him now, this is quoting Michael Pintard, they are very good at finding ways that others pay penalties for what they believe to be malfeasance. But since they are in the chair now, they're making sure that they get this legislation, so that if ever, some would even say whenever, they have to face the music, certain penalties are not available, and some would say the music should have been faced with the Bermuda trip, but nothing has happened. And borrowed money for vote. The opposition leader was making a direct reference to two controversies that ensnared the Davis administration in recent months. In October, the government agreed to reimburse the public purse after the media revealed that Prime Minister had led a delegation to Bermuda for a political trip on the people's dime. And on a matter related to the central bank, the government last month conceded that the bank did not technically remit $232 million of the International Monetary Fund's special drawing rights to the government because the Central Bank Act prohibited it, leading the government to issue an amendment to the Act to clean up the transaction and make the law change retroactive. This week, Pintard continued to accuse the government of secrecy in the award of contracts. given that it has not been adhering to the reporting provisions in the current Public Procurement Act. He said that this is an administration that does not want to tell us who all they've been giving contracts to. He added that this is what the situation boils down to, and wondered whether there's a retromware to go back and cover all that they have not said in the debate thus far. Pintard said, and I quote, "We do not know when we approved this money here who they have spent this money with for the last 18 months. That's what the issue is," unquote. Prime Minister Davis had previously promised to provide a full report to Parliament on contract awards since his party formed the government in 2021, but such a report has yet to be issued. I think the fact that that report has yet to be issued is challenging for me, because it's difficult to say in a political arena, just trust me. And by not providing the list of contracts awarded so far, that is what the administration is basically saying, just trust me. And we have not had a great a great relationship with just trust me. It hasn't worked out well for us. In any event, I think that's where we are for now. I'm going to thank you for joining us on our journey today. I had hoped to speak with, I don't think you'll mind me sharing it with you. I'd hope to speak with the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party. In the name of Jesus. He was, but he's in London, and he got called away from our intended meeting time, and so I'll try to get together with him next week. Until then, God bless you. At 6 o'clock, tune in for Let's Talk Live in English with Lady T. That's going to do it for me. My name is K. Quincy Parker. I'm your host. You've been listening to The Political Room, Political Review, here on Guardian Talk Radio. Wally, thanks for a great job as usual, my brother. God bless. Y'all have a wonderful day. Bye-bye. We're trying to make me do what I used to, but all that stops right here. As long as the Lord's in my life, I will have no fear. I will know no pain from the light to the dark. I will show no shame, spin it right from the heart. Because it's right from the start. You held me down, and ain't nothing they can tell me now. Lord, give me a sign. Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what I'm gonna find. It's all in time. Show me how to teach the mind. Show me how to reach the blind. Lord, give me a sign. Show me what I got to do to bring me closer to you, 'cause I'ma go through.